Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. House Bill 1057 led headlines out of the South Dakota legislature for weeks as it sought to criminalize gender-affirming medical care for children. The bill ultimately failed in the state Senate, but its ripple effects continue across the state. Ellie Krug is a transgender woman and a national speaker on human inclusivity. She speaks on that topic this Saturday in Sioux Falls at the Holiday Inn City Center. Her discussion, Bridging Divides, is free and open to the public beginning at 10 a.m. Ellie joins us by phone this morning from the Twin Cities. Ellie, thanks for being with us today.
Hi, Lori. Thanks for having me.
Let's talk about this legislation first, especially regarding the conversation that happens around this legislation. So I'm sure that you know that for years now, the South Dakota State Legislature has brought 1 year it was a transgender bathroom bill, the next year it was a transgender locker room bill, this year it was a bill targeting transgender health care. And every time we have conversations about these issues, and it seems to me from my end that people are getting more and more savvy, whereas before they didn't really even know anybody who was transgender, they didn't know if there were any people who were transgender in the state. It's kind of been South Dakota's version of Transgender 101, and I'm guessing there's a better way that you might see to sort of have that education conversation. So let's talk a little bit about, if you would, to start out with, having the conversation about it and the things that kind of spark that conversation.
Well, you know, I'll tell you something. About 4 years ago, I spoke in Rapid City. One of your colleagues came to my talk, and he asked me probably one of the best questions I've ever been asked in 10 years of training and presenting. And the question he asked me is, Ellie, why would it matter to a rancher 20 miles outside of Rapid City that you're transgender or anything about transgender people? And I'll tell you, I didn't give a very good answer at that time. And it's one of those things where if you could go back and do it all over again, you know you'd have the perfect answer.
Yeah.
But what I came to conclude is that this topic would be important to all South Dakotans, including that rancher outside of Rapid City, because you don't ever know who in your family or in your circle of friends may identify as transgender or as non-binary. Non-binary people do not identify as either male or female. They just simply identify as humans. And the reality is, as our society gets more progressive, and whether you like it or not, it is becoming progressive. I mean, it is changing as the information digital age has allowed us to be in touch with each other in ways that was never possible 30 or 40 years ago. And as people understand, you know, there are all kinds of humans with all kinds of challenges. Some of them around sexuality, some of them around gender identity. But, you know, there are people with challenges just every day attempting to survive the human condition. And as we come to learn that these challenges are not like choices, this is part of about being human. I think that people are becoming more willing to allow people to be in a space where they can live authentically.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that that's what's happening. You know, you call it Transgender 101 in South Dakota. I think it's going across the country as far as I can see in the same way.
Right. And you do workshops on Transgender 101. That's why I'm calling it that as referring to the work that you do, because I don't think this is a very thought out. I mean, this is sort of, we're catching these topics as they come up. When you go and talk to people about Transgender 101, here are the basics. Here's how to talk to people. Here's how pronouns work. Like, where do you find the most hunger for what people are curious about, people who want to understand better? And then we'll talk about people who maybe, don't want to understand. But for people who seek information from you and who are curious, what kinds of questions do they ask again and again?
Well, I mean, the most basic question that people do ask is how can I be welcoming to people who are transgender and non-binary? You know, and you hit the nail on the head when you talked about pronouns and using you know, right now your listeners are hearing what sounds like a man's voice on the radio, and they're like wondering, who is this person with the name Ellie that sounds like a man or a dude? And for people like me, who it's called passing, I mean, if you looked at me right now, I'm a fairly attractive 63-year-old woman who's in very good shape. But I know, of course, you can't see that, obviously, through the radio. And so for me, pronouns, and for other people in my community, pronouns are very important. So please, she and her, towards me, because that at least allows me to know that you're giving me at least basic human respect. You know, people ask other questions. People are very interested in understanding about what it means to transition genders. How does that happen? People want to know how can your brain not match your body? I mean, that, how is that possible? And trust me, it is, because I tried for a very long time to stay a man, and I didn't transition genders until I was 52 years old, and spent 3 decades trying to just stay male, believing I could choose. So there are all those kinds of questions that we get, and I'm finding, frankly, that most people, even people who might be considered intolerant, most people are willing to at least listen about what it means to be transgender.
This legislation, House Bill 1007, which failed in committee in the Senate, in the state Senate, was called the Vulnerable Child Protection Act. And when you look at the testimony and the tweets and the communications from the people who wanted this legislation to pass, they expressed, I believe, genuine concern about protecting children from things that were permanent. And then we have had many shows where we talk about, you know, what exactly are the facts here. But I want you to address, as we talk about kind of understanding each other, where do you, as a transgender woman, sort of begin in hearing these other people who believe that they're trying to protect children from something that they have called experimental, unregulated? Those were a lot of the words that they were using. How do you begin understanding where someone is coming from with that legislation in order to come to some kind of understanding with one another?
Well, I would begin by answering that question that I have a saying that human authenticity will not leave you alone until you listen. And this thing about being authentic as a human is not a choice. Now, the folks, you know, who introduced the legislation or are supportive of that legislation, what I would say to them is, why now? Why suddenly is it today that you want to protect transgender children? Why is it through trying to protect them through, you know, healthcare? I know. I mean, it would be one thing, Lori, if it was just South Dakota that introduced the bill and you had a bunch of very caring South Dakotans, you're like, hey, this is a big problem. But the reality is that this is a movement across the United States. It is a movement driven by large conservative-led organizations that seek to marginalize transgender humans. They seek to, in many ways, erase my community. And that's because, I don't know, maybe we make people uncomfortable. Maybe there's some religious convictions involved. Although when I talk with people with religious views, I certainly find that they are willing to listen to me and reconsider some of the things that they've been hearing in their churches. The point here is that this is not just a group of people that sat down and like, I really care about transgender youth. This is part of a national movement against my community. And I think that we have to understand that because, you know, on the day that the Senate in South Dakota killed the bill, there was a very similar bill introduced in Ohio by Ohio legislators. So, you know, right now there are, I think, 12 states that are considering various forms of healthcare criminalization for, as it relates to transgender kids.
When you look at that model legislation that uses some of the same language in different states, and we can trace and track through the Center for Public Integrity and through the work of journalists sort of how those bills are transitioning from state house to state house and where those efforts are. And then you say it feels and it appears like this is a concentrated effort. It is a concentrated effort, but it feels like a concentrated effort to erase a community, which sounds incredibly intense to experience. This bill failed in South Dakota, and I'm wondering if you can address the impact of that process, even though it failed, on people who are experiencing this erasure, this attempted erasing.
Absolutely, Laura. So, I'm 63 years old. I have six decades of perspective and grit building. For our 14-year-old or 15-year-old or 12-year-old transgender child or teen, they don't have that perspective or grit. And when you hear year in and year out, you laid that out at the beginning of the program, you know, that people in your state, where you live, want you not to be present in public, because that's what the bathroom bill is about. If you cannot use a public bathroom, you cannot leave your house. If you can't use the bathroom or the locker room at school, you may not be able to go to school. And so then you're no longer present in public. And so our younger people, they hear that message, and it's devastating to them, because they're already struggling with this societal view that your brain and body have to match. And then now they get the message from the government that you are unworthy. And I don't want to sound overly dramatic here to you, but that is the message that they are receiving. I mean, can you imagine if there was a law targeting African-American children with sickle cell? We've decided that, those children have to wait until they're adults to get that type of treatment. Can you imagine the outcry that would go across your state as well as the country? But when transgender kids are the target, let's consider this. I mean, and that's what our 14-year-old, our young people are hearing. Your young people are hearing in South Dakota, as well as in other states across the country.
Through the work that you do as an advocate, through the work that you do in educating people and in public presentations and speeches and workshops, and you have a book and you have a newsletter, you have a blog, people can find a lot of your voice in the world. And just walking around the world as a transgender woman, serving in a courtroom as an attorney, you have confronted, most of us come to this conversation from a place of privilege where this is not our lived experience. You're living this experience. And I'm wondering, when you see people who are afraid of, who make people into others, who are afraid of people not like them, you look into their eyes, what do you see? Where does that fear come from? Do you have a sense of, through all your work, why it cuts to the heart of so many people when they are confronted with something that is different than what they expected in a human being?
I think that people generally, whether we're talking about transgender people or people with different skin colors or different country of origin, people are afraid of others. They're afraid, how am I going to communicate? Am I going to say the wrong thing? Are you going to hurt me? Or, with transgender people, there's this fear that somehow I'm going to turn cisgender, that would be non-transgender kids, into transgender people. I mean, this, that same argument we heard with gay and lesbian people back in the 70s and the 80s. However, and I want your listeners to understand this, I believe in the goodness of almost all people. I believe what I find when I look in people's eyes is I see, for the most part, we are like talking 98% of all humans. I see good, empathetic hearts. I see people who want to do the right thing, but who are afraid, or they're getting messaging from various sources that my community that I'm to be distrusted in some way. But do you know what? When we allow people to show up and we have a conversation, and I do not seek to shame anybody. I do not seek to yell at anyone. I seek to have you come and let us have a conversation where you can learn about me. I can hear some of your fears. I can learn about you because, you know, there are people, you know, from the religious communities, and I'm a huge believer in religion and letting people practice as they want. But there are people in religious communities that fear me. And when I go and I talk with them, it's amazing the reaction that I get, which is, Ellie, I didn't expect you to be like you are, like a nice person, you know, like somebody that I could talk to. And then they want to start asking me questions. Well, I have this relative who's gay. Ellie, what should I do about that? Or, Ellie, I'm marginalized at my church. My church is marginalized in this community. What can you say about that? And what that then does is bring us to conversations about commonalities. Because in the end, Lori, all of us, I don't care what color skin or what religion you practice or who you love or who you go to bed as, we all want the same things in life. We do. And I cultivate that in my work.
Is it inspiring to you to do this work? Is there a part of you that just wishes you could just live your life? You're called into something here that is a sacrifice, a personal sacrifice, as well as, you know, as a vocation. How do you, I guess my question more directly is, how do you sustain yourself for the work that you have chosen to do and in some ways has been chosen for you?
Well, if folks come to listen to me on Saturday in Sioux Falls, they hear me say that I'm a hopeless idealist. I'm a student of Dr. King and Robert F. Kennedy. I was 11 years old when they were murdered. And before they went, I listened to what they had to say, as well as did millions of others. And what they taught me is that we have an obligation to make this world a better place. When I struggled with my gender identity, when I was fighting myself to still stay a man, I couldn't be the idealist I really am, because you can't be idealistic if you're not living authentically. And once I transitioned, and there was a lot of loss in my transitioning. I mean, I lost my wife, and I ended up losing my law practice, and I lost a daughter for a while, but she came back. I just said, you know what? I'm going to go out and be the idealist Dr. King and Robert F. Kennedy taught me to be. And that is what I'm doing. That is why I'm coming to South Dakota. It's not because I know better than anyone else. It's because I do believe in the goodness of all humans. And I do believe that all humans can get past their fear of other. And that we can become familiar with each other, and that we can have compassion for each other. I absolutely believe that. I do.
You mentioned the decades that you spent as a man before you transitioned. Tell me about the first time you stood in front of a courtroom as an attorney, as a female attorney. What was that moment like for you, trying your first case or being in a courtroom for the first time as your authentic self?
So I transitioned genders in May of 2009, and in July of 2009, I was trying a jury case in downtown Cedar Rapids. And I have to tell you, it was both frightening as well as enlivening, because frightening in the sense that here I am finally getting to be who I really am. But that was enlivening. I mean, it was just wonderful to be able to do that. But it was frightening in the sense that I didn't know if I would be judged. I didn't know if my clients would be judged. And in fact, I was able to get the permission of the court to explain to the jury that I was transgender, and to ask them not to hold it against my clients in that case. And to the credit of the jury, they didn't hold it against my clients. And in fact, after four trial days, we won the case. I won it as Ellie Krug. And it was wonderful to have that feeling, to know that I could still do the work, that I could still be a good lawyer. And finally, as me, as a woman. But because people have fears, and because I represented some industries, railroads and trucking companies that are not historically very LGBTQ friendly, I eventually ended up losing my law practice. All turned out well. stories, all good, but that was a consequence of me being me. And I had anticipated that that would happen.
Right. Do you think the transgender community, I want to go back to something you said about, you know, without being authentic, you can't be an idealist. Without being authentic, there's so many different things that you can't do in this one life that you have. And I'm wondering if you're finding that the transgender community and transgender voices are inspiring all humans to live closer to their, you know, their more authentic self and be who they want to be. When you meet people, do you find this this connection, this commonality in it's time to be who I really am? It's exhausting trying to be someone else.
You know, I gave a talk a couple weeks ago to lawyers here in Minneapolis, a Trans 101 talk, and I talked about human authenticity. And afterward, I got an email from one of the audience members who told me that he had left big law to go and be able to be a writer and to make music. And he thanked me in that email for reminding him the value of living his life as who he truly is. All of us are struggling with authenticity. Right now, you have listeners right now stuck in jobs or in relationships or doing things that they absolutely abhor, that is inconsistent with who they are authentically. But they're afraid to make changes. They're afraid of the cost. They're afraid of who it might hurt or how it might hurt them. But the reality is human authenticity will not leave you alone, whether you are a writer or a singer or a thespian or even, you know, Michael's is your second home and you're a crafter, okay? Human authenticity will not leave you alone until you listen. And when I share that message with audience members, whether they're gay or lesbian or straight or whatever, they react because I am letting people know they have permission to live as who they truly are. That's the lemonade that I get out of all the loss that I had in becoming me. And I don't know how much time we have left, but there's one last thing I'd like to say to your listeners.
Please.
You know, right now you're listening to the voice of a man on the radio, but I've already told you I look female. The health care bill that sought to take away health care of young transgender people, what that would do for transgender girls, that people going from male to female, transgender women, is that would leave them with this kind of voice. And the problems that come with your voice not matching your appearance. That is why it's so important to allow young transgender people to work with professionals, healthcare professionals, so that ultimately they're not stuck with things that don't work. And that, I mean, there are places in this country I cannot even go because of my voice, because I would be at risk. So in the end, if you really do care about young transgender people, allow them to have a health care. Allow them to work with professionals. It's not experimentation. It's life-saving and affirming.
Ellie Krug, I want to let you know that as you've been talking, we've been getting a few emails from listeners of support and gratitude for you. You are welcome back to South Dakota, and you'll be here Saturday, February 22nd, the Holiday Inn City Center in Sioux Falls at 10 a.m. Krug's talk is called Bridging Divides. And Ellie, leave us with your website information where people can follow you on social media, please, if you would.
Sure. So the website is www.ellie.krug.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Ellie Krug or on Instagram at Ellie J. Krug. And I look forward to coming to South Dakota. I look forward to meeting new friends and to having robust conversations about what it means to live authentically and to bridge the divisions that exist between us because we're afraid of others. Thank you so very much, Lori.
Thank you, Ellie, for doing that work today. We appreciate your time.